Blog Talk Radio.
Another great show brought to you through the Law of Attraction Radio Network. Today is the beginning of the rest of your life. And today you can tap into the source in which to live a wonderful new lifestyle of wealth and abundance that affects all areas of your life.
I hear you now.
Join Dr. Anne as she enriches us with her holistic wisdom on the Joy of Wealthy Living radio program.
Yes, I can.
And here's Dr. Anne.
I can hear you. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Joy of Wealthy Living radio program. It is so good to be here this morning. We have been absent from the radio waves for a little while, but I am here to tell you that we are here and we are going to be here from now on. So again, this is Dr. Ann. Welcome to the Joy of Wealthy Living radio program. And we have an exciting guest this morning, and we are going to talk about owl. Ooh. Oh, well, maybe not that kind of owl, but you'll find out exactly what owl, O-W-L, stands for. But I just want to remind you that you are here because the Joy of Wealthy Living is a radio program that looks at what it means to be living wealthy from a holistic approach. A holistic approach includes using the law of attraction in all areas of one's life, which includes your career, your relationships in your life, recreation and having fun, health and wellness, abundance and finances, and spirituality. Yes, 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 yes. Again, here is an old quote, but a good one. We are looking at a future where to a first approximation, everyone is wealthy. Everyone is wealthy in all areas of one's life. The original quote was by Ralph Merkle. Yes. Oh, so before we get into the rest of this program, I just want to anchor us in a little affirmation, a little prayer work here, just knowing that right here and right now that all our needs are met, every single one of them, no matter what it may appear to be, all your needs are met right here, right now. Whether it's finances that needs to be straightened out, they're taken care of. Whether it's finding the perfect soulmate, that person is looking for you just like you are looking for them. Whether it is finding the perfect career, you are being groomed and pruned for the right position. The right career opportunities are there for you, and they are just waiting for you to open the door and walk right through. Whether it is taking time to nourish yourself, this is the time. Yes, yes, yes. And with that, be joyful in all things. Be joyful and know that you are living a wonderful, wealthy life right here and right now. I say these words knowing that they are true in the presence, and that they are manifesting in our lives right here and now. Oh, that was good. That was excellent. So our guest today is Dr. Janice Fletcher. And let me just tell you just a little bit about Dr. Janice. She is an educational consultant. And she comes from a place of wisdom from the inner teacher. Dr. Janice has integrated her educational administrative experience, principal coaching, and business leadership training with her passion for her philosophy and learning. She currently lives in a lakeside community near Charlotte, North Carolina, with her husband and two golden retrievers. Oh, how sweet is that? Ah, Dr. Janet, are you there?
I am here. Thank you so much, Dr. Ann. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
It is a pleasure to have you here today. First of all, I have to ask any of my people who live on the East Coast, how are you doing? Did you get a little visit from Sandy?
We were very lucky because we're on the west side of North Carolina, so we just had a bit of rain and a bit of wind, and that was it. So we were safe from Sandy.
Well, that's a blessing right there.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes, 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 because you could have been a few miles close to the edge there, and you would not have been saying those words right now.
Right.
So, Dr. Janice, could you tell us a little bit more about yourself to our listening audience today?
Well, certainly, there's a lot to tell. You know, I have a long history being as old as I am, almost 59 now, so there's a long history within this life that brings me to this point, but most of it has been spent in the purpose of being in service through education and various roles throughout my career, you know, as you mentioned, of a principal, an administrator, working in the superintendent's office, consultant with leadership groups, and so on and so forth. And all of that, then, along with that, I've been following my spiritual path. And so the two have integrated quite beautifully at this point in time in my life for me to now speak about the passion of both, which comes together in this book, Wisdom from the Inner Teacher, and OWL, which is Optimal Wisdom Learning. And so that is what's now my purpose in service, is to share that with the world and have everybody in the world, one person at a time perhaps, or groups at a time, understand what an aha moment is, bring consciousness and awareness to it, turning it into an OWL moment, and then shifting their life into more insight, more wisdom flowing through into them. So that gives you pretty much a nutshell of where I've been and where I am and where I'm going.
Well, you have a very, we have similar, I guess you would say, paths. Because if you know anything about me, I started out and still am in education. And I think everything that we do, whether we're in a formal classroom or not, or whether we're sitting in that principal's office, it's all about education. You know, we meet people and we exchange information, but it's still about when the teacher meets, the student will show up. When the student is ready, the teacher will show up. Do you not agree, Dr. Janice?
Oh, absolutely. Everything is divinely timed. And so when this message came forth for me to bring forth to the world was at its appropriate time, and how it's being delivered. And I think of it as, you know, OWL is the acronym for Optimal Wisdom Learning, so that therefore is my icon and so on. Yeah. And it's a great time to be in favor of owls here at the Halloween time. But anyway,
yes, yes.
Wherever the owl is flying me is where I'm going, wherever the opportunities come forth. I follow up on, and some work and some don't. So here we are, and this is divinely timed also.
Absolutely, absolutely. So are you still a principal of an educational institution there in North Carolina?
No, I am not a principal anymore. I quit that when I moved to the islands many, many years ago. In 97, I became the nationally distinguished principal for the state of Georgia, and then left that position and went to Grand Cayman for 5 years and began working as a consultant. And that was a wonderful transformation of my life, to take myself out of the A-type personality and sort of sit on a dock, as I talk about in my book, and decide, what now, what do I do? Because nobody really cared in that Caribbean island, you know, what I had done in Cobb County or in Georgia or in the Atlanta area for most of my career. So it was an interesting time.
Grand Cayman Island. Oh, my goodness. That is fabulous. That is so fabulous. You know, I know I'm getting away from the subject just a little bit, but I love Grand Cayman. I've been there a couple of times, and the one place that I really get a kick of it is a place called Hell.
Yes.
And there's a little man with a dressed up in the devil suit, and they have a post office, and I sent postcards from Hell to friends who told me to go to Hell, and I said, guess what? I'm here and wish you were here too. So,
right. It's a fun place, yeah.
Yes, it is a fun place. So, Dr. Janice, tell us some more about wisdom from the inner teacher. I know that we all are teachers, some professionals, some, you know, will claim that they're not a teacher, but we all have something to contribute to each other on this planet at this time. So tell us a little bit more about that, please.
Wisdom from the inner teacher talks about how we, in fact, receive, what wisdom is, and then how we access it, and then how we are able to access wisdom more readily and more consistently. Mm-hmm. So wisdom from the inner teacher talks about not only the cognition of how our brain works, it also, more importantly, talks about the intuitive part of our brain. Or we can look at this particular topic from a number of different points of view. Depends on who you are in the world as to which applies to you or which definition makes you feel most comfortable. You can look at it biologically, and we can discuss what actually happens in the brain, or neuroscientifically, and all of that is defined and scientifically pronounced and proven within the brain of what goes on when these moments come in and these insights come in and how they happen. Or you can look at it psychologically of what happens within your world and the psychology of it all, or philosophically or spiritually. So all of the different definitions apply to the six-step process, the wisdom, the book, Wisdom from the Inner Teacher, for which I am the author, defines a six-step process that enlightens us as to how, in fact, these aha moments come about. And because at this point in time, we live our lives and these moments come in and they pounce out and we get them and we go, oh, that's the answer, or that's how I get it, or yeah, that makes sense, I already, that's it, I knew it. And so they come and then they go, and we don't really pay much attention to them. We don't expect them, and we're happy when we get the truth or the insight or the wisdom, but we don't plan for them, and we don't really recognize them as anything special, and we aren't really grateful for them, nor do we really have an openness or an expectation for them. So the purpose of the book is to identify the six-step process and to make people aware of aha moments and insights or whatever you want to call them, and then to make them more readily available to all. So that's the basis of it.
Yeah. So, Dr. Janice, you've talked briefly about this six-step process that's in the book. So for our listeners who do not have the book right now, can you explain a little bit more about what this six-step process is all about?
Sure, I'd be happy to. And, of course, if people are interested in learning more about the book, they can just go to my website, janicefletcher.com, and order one very easily.
Okay.
The six-step process is very logical, number one. First of all, when we think about wisdom, wisdom is truth. And this wisdom,
yes.
So one is the same as the other. And so what we want to do is access that truth or that wisdom. And how that comes about is, number one, the first step is that we have a desire for information, a desire for an answer. We want to problem solve. We want a solution. There's something that we're seeking an answer to. And so that desire is the first step, and this process doesn't happen without it. And what one can do as we go through this six-step process is to recognize that this is what has happened to you in the past with an aha moment or with an epiphany, if you will, if you would prefer to call it an epiphany, is that you've actually sought out something or were seeking. There is a seeking stage or a stage of desire. And then
yes.
once you go through this state of desire, the seeking, you ask in your mind and you go through all the portals of your mind and you ask and you try and figure out what the solution or the answer or the problem solution is, and you can't figure it out. And you ask other people and you Google it and you go everywhere you go and you still are not satisfied with your answer. The question could be anything from what is, you know, the name of that tree, you know, what is
yes.
the title of the
yes.
name of that tree, or what is the meaning of the universe, or what is the solution to the economic problems of the United States. Whatever is your question,
yes.
you're seeking the answer. And so that you look and look and look, and that's part of this first step, is the desiring, the seeking, and the seeking, and the seeking. There comes
mm-hmm.
a point where you just give up. You say, I don't know. I just don't know. I give up. I tried to figure
mm-hmm.
it out. Tried to find the answer, and I've gotten a number of answers. I don't know which one is right, or I'm not happy with the answer. I just don't know. So in that point of saying, I give up, or I don't know, is the second step, which is the second step is surrender.
Yes.
And so this is a natural occurrence, right? We go from the seeking, and we can't figure it out, to then I give up, and you're sort of exhausted because you've been through some sort of frustration there. And the frustration is actually part of it. Did you want to speak? Because I can be quiet here for a moment if
oh,
you'd like
no.
to.
Well, I did have a question about this. Well, just a comment on surrender. Do you find that surrendering is a little difficult to do?
Oh, of course. Yes, surrendering is the most difficult thing to do in all realms. You know, whatever realm you're looking at, whether it's the spiritual realm of, you know, surrendering your ego, which is ultimately what it's about, or whether you're surrendering as the business leader to not having the answer and you need somebody else to guide you or advise you, or,
mm-hmm.
you know, if, you know, you're surrendering because you don't have the answer. So, yes, that's most difficult. And in honing the six-step process, we can't really demand an aha moment or a moment of insight or an epiphany. We can't demand them, but we can create the conditions in our life that allow us to have them more readily available or to be open to them. And one of the techniques of doing that is to recognize what the steps are as they're happening, and
mm-hmm.
we can allow ourselves to be more surrendered, or which means that we're actually being more open or less rigid, so that other people can have answers or other places can provide answers to us or input that will come to us. So the surrender process is ultimately difficult, and of course, but we can, you know, work on that. We can, and number one is just being open to it and allowing the surrendering process to happen and being grateful for it, if you can go that far as to say, I know that this has been frustrating, but I'm going to give up, and I know that the answer will happen. And so that's the second step, is surrendering. And the
mm-hmm.
third step then takes us very logically into stillness. Because what has happened then is that our mind is quieted. We are no longer seeking. We're no longer frantically looking everywhere and full of anxiety and stress of trying to figure out the answer and frustration of trying to figure out the answer. We've actually given up, and so therefore our mind has become still. Now, biologically or neuroscientifically, there's actually what is going on within our physical being is that the left brain, which is the linear, logical part of our brain that likes to think in numbers and sequences and so on, is now quiet, and it is
yes.
not working. So it is
yes.
still. And then that means that the right brain opens up, and the right brain is the whole holistic, visual, you know, big picture, looking at images, seeing things in pictures, and it's a much bigger way of looking at things and so on, and most often referred to as the creative side. You know, most
yes.
So the creative side opens up, and that's where and how wisdom comes through, biologically or neuroscientifically. So these insights, these truths come through the right brain. And so what happens as we move through this process is we naturally give up, and then our left brain shuts down. Now, at this point is where we can look individually at ourselves, and we need to know thyself, like Socrates said. And
uh-huh.
so the process is to become introspective, to, if you will, autopsy how this happens to us when we have an aha moment. The key to it is to, first of all, receive the wisdom and act on it and be grateful for it, for sure. But also, if you really want to make it into an owl moment, the way that you do that is to look at the conditions that caused you to have that wisdom come through. where were you and how, what were the conditions for everybody's different. The uniform part of it is that everybody will be in an alpha state of mind. So mm-hmm. where does your alpha state of mind come in? An alpha state means that you're sort of between the two worlds. You're not in the, your left brain linear thinking. You are somewhere in the right brain, and you might be falling asleep or waking up. It might be the middle of the night where you jump up and have to write something down. It might be when you're taking a walk and in the woods. It might be when you're in the shower. It might be when you're, you know, playing your favorite sport or in your zone of whatever it is you're doing. But somewhere there will be a flow that will come through that doesn't have anything to do with your left brain rational mind. And
yes.
So each of us has to pay attention to who, how our lives are and how we have been made up. And where, not that our aha moments or our epiphanies or wisdoms are not coming in, they are, paying attention to when they are and when they come in, so that we can then recreate those conditions, not on demand, but know, you know, when I get to the point of frustration of trying to figure out what to do with this question or this problem, that I can more easily let it go and just have the expectation that the answer will come, as you said in the beginning, when the divine is ready, or when the timing is right, or when my being is in a state where it is an alpha state. And we can also enhance this by allowing ourselves to have more alpha states of mind. So whatever mm-hmm. that is for us, you know, whether it means that we need to have more time where we're being creative, or we're not working so hard, or we're allowing ourselves to think with our right brain. The biggest example, and this is probably Google,
mm-hmm.
Google, of course, is one of the leaders because they work with innovation, creativity, inventiveness, you know, higher states of thinking and so on. And what they do, what they have done for a decade or more now, for many, many years, is they've understood what it takes to have the creative mind work. And so they put in ping pong tables and plays and things and couches and made it not into a work area but a play area. So that the people that are programming and creating all these things at Google have the state of mind that they can in fact have a more creative way of living their work, if you will.
Yes.
And so therefore, the more of the creative mind is open. So what we can do in our world is that we can, number one, pay attention to what it is in our day and our being that allows that wisdom to come through. And or the variety of ways, it may not just be one way, but when they do come in, poof, that's a very, very important piece of information, because stop right there and just look around and
mm-hmm.
say, okay, that I needed to be in a group of people brainstorming, or I needed to be by myself, or I needed 3 days off from the problem, or I needed, you know, to have perfect solitude, or I needed to be in a church, or I needed to be in nature, or where I needed to be asleep, whatever it is, then that's how you know thyself. And then when the wisdom then comes through and you get the answer, you know you now know how to solve the economic problem, or you know what 2 + 2 is, or the name of the tree, and you have the answer, the next step is to receive that. So that is the fourth step, is by listening. Okay, so the first step was desire, the second step is surrender, the third step is to still the mind. See, all these just naturally happen.
Yes.
The fourth step is to listen. Now, all of us have received wisdom, answers, epiphanies,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
insight that we've ignored. And that's
yes.
when we say, I knew I shouldn't have done that. I knew it, I knew it, I knew it, right? And
yeah.
we've all done that, and we've all done the opposite. When we have listened and said, I knew that was going to be, I told you so, that is, I knew it. So the other unique aspect of these epiphanies and this truth and wisdom is, we can call it truth and call it insight, and I say that it is truth. Now, what? Think about it with me, everybody.
Yes,
when you
yes.
hear these truths coming through, you never doubt them. You never doubt them. You know that they are true. It's
mm-hmm.
just absolute. They come in, it's like, poof, that is the answer. And that's what I was looking for.
So, Dr. Janice, just to mm-hmm. cut in for just a second, so anytime that we have doubts or concerns or something like that, we might dress it up and say, you know, I have a concern about something. So that may not be the truth or the wisdom. Is that true?
If you're having a doubt about something, then you're not sure about it, yes. So you want to be sure about it. So you want to wait until you are sure. And although we cannot demand these truths to come through, the more, it's like any muscle, anything of our being, the more we use it, the more readily available it is. So the more that we, and between our left and our right brain, we have like what I call a rickety little road that's a dirt road. And by paying attention to what's going on with these moments of insight, just the awareness of it, just the consciousness of the, that it's happening, how it happens and what takes place, builds a superhighway between the left and the right brain.
Yes.
So while we want, how we want to receive more wisdom is to, in fact, pay more attention to it. So it's just, and you don't have to go take a course. You don't have to pay any money. You don't have to do anything, but pay attention to this, this wisdom that's coming through and how it happens, and thereby your entire being and physiologically or biologically your brain literally, and there's tons of scientific studies that shows that right before the insight comes through, right before we get the punchline to a joke, right before we have the answer, that our brain literally lights up. There's a little burst of neurons or whatever they're called that just light up. So that's where we get that, the whole symbol of the flashlight above the head.
Yes.
There really is a lighting up of our brain, biologically speaking, that goes forth with this. So when we are, because we are in doubt, if we want to be in less doubt about the answers that we come forth, or on the other side, if we want to be more sure about the answers or the decisions that we are making, then practicing listening to ourself and paying attention to how this answer is coming forth is how you make it more readily available, and you'll become more and more intuitive just naturally, because the intuition comes from the right side of the brain where the insight epiphanies come. So what you're actually asking or creating is more intuition, which, by the way, is what's happening in America for sure right now. You know, we are not manufacturing, or the manufacturing country that we once were. Even though we're trying to be, we won't be. We can't be who we were. We're not the industrial age. We are, however. What do we have? We have the creative thinking process. We have, you know, the innovation and the problem solving and the new ideas. So, Daniel Pink, one of my favorite authors, wrote The Whole Mind, which talks about the right brainers taking over the world, which means that that's where we need to do, and we're being forced into that, are we not? Every time we turn around, there's some gadgets we have to figure out how to use and so on, and we have to, you know, become intuitive with it to know how to do it. So we have to be creative, we have to be less rigid, and we can't just stay in one place at any time, and we're just constantly changing and moving. So it is most important at this point in time that we, in fact, do use more of our right brain so that we can be more creative and we can move from one job to another to be flexible and so on. However, I haven't even gotten to the steps yet. So where were we? We're on step number, listen, right? So that's the fourth step. Yes, go ahead.
It is so interesting that you should mention Daniel Pink. I saw him Sunday on Oprah's hour that she has with various thinkers of this new way of thinking, and he was her guest, and he talked about people who are right brainers, or, you know, will be the ones that will be taking over the world now. And this is the age that we're in, using the creative side more so than the other side, the left side. And it was interesting that you should bring him up with your research and connecting what he is doing with what you're doing. And I see that you're also, for those people who are so science entrenched, that there is now studies, there is proof, scientific proof, that what we've been saying about the right side and the creativity is, you know, factual. It is what it is. It is taking care. It is, if not more important than the other side. So, you know, I really appreciate
that. Yeah. I'm glad that it's confirming what you. Yeah, it is. It is a fact now. Science is proving it. So once now that we know that these insights, we can prove them. We're not just saying, "Oh my, this is some sort of magic. This is some sort of woo-woo." No, it's actually scientifically proven how it happens. Then, so the next step of the process, once we actually hear it, is to listen. You know, I mean, so we have to, by listening to it, we can get the answer. But then to truly appreciate the answer and to acknowledge that it is, in fact, truth that has come true, is that we must then act on it. Okay, I often tell, and I speak about it in my book, Wisdom from the Inner Teacher, and that is the story about when I was a principal. And I was very much in charge of wanting to be the instructional leader at the time, and so I didn't want to do any managerial tasks. And, you know, I had a really sort of snobby nose about that, and I just wanted to be this great instructional leader. Well, I was teaching something about staff development, about teaching to my staff, and right in the middle of being the instructional leader, they interrupted me with this managerial task of, you know, choosing the paint color or whatever, and I was just so interrupted, you know, and whatever. I just went up and glanced at it and pointed my finger, and then I came back, and the whole time I knew I'd made the wrong decision, and I didn't listen to myself, and I just was really haunted by it. Well, the school ended up being Pepto-Bismol pink.
Oh,
it was just
no!
Horrible decision that was just in there, you know, trying to make this good impression, and I was very much humbled by my ridiculous you know, thing. But the point is that I didn't listen to myself, and I acted against what I knew was wrong. And so the point then is for us to be able to, in fact, act on the wisdom. So if, in fact, they pull me out of a meeting and I point my finger and I walk back in and I don't feel good about it, I should act on it, and I didn't. And so we need to act as the fifth step in the process. So not only do we listen, but we must act. And the final step then is what do we do with it? We can test it, and we can recreate it and sustain it. So we take this wisdom of whatever it is this the right paint color for the school? Is this what I should eat? Is this the answer to the economic problem? And we can test it and apply it. So you can apply that, and then that's the final step of it. And by applying it, you are actually then, it's a literally to me as though you have been given a sacred gift, and you are then embracing the gift and using it rather than just putting it on a shelf and ignoring it. So by embracing it and using it, you have a sense of gratitude and appreciation for it, and that gratitude for the wisdom and the insight and the truth that's come through then again reinforces the access to the wisdom so that more can come through. So long story about the six steps, but included in whatever I've said is the actual six steps of the process for the wisdom from the inner teacher. And you also can apply this to school, of course, you know, which is very important.
So the first step, let's go over these steps once again. So the first step is to make sure you know what the desire is that you're seeking, okay? And the second step, after you go through that particular step of seeking and you don't get the answer, you surrender. You surrender. Now, again, with the surrendering, I have a question. Is it just to surrender, or do you surrender to your higher power?
Well, it would depend on the person. For instance, when I talk about the inner teacher, I don't care what you how you define it or what the name is. Some people call it, you know, your brain. Some people call it your higher being, your higher consciousness. Some people call it God. Some people call it spirit. Some people call it whatever they want to call it. It doesn't matter to me what you call it. You can just say that your brain's, you know, tuning in. Physically, your brain is tuning in to those answers that are available to us. There's a whole study of kinesiology, you know, about muscle testing and so on, where your body will answer for you yes or no. So whatever you want to call it, it doesn't matter at all. And whether or not you're conscious of surrendering or not, you are surrendered. The point is you give up. So every time you give up, you're always surrendering to, like if you're in a fight with somebody and you're in a fist fight and you say, okay, enough, I give up, you know, I surrender, then you are surrendering to the opponent. So any kind of fight, any kind of frustration, any kind of conflict, you are surrendering to backing off, which means that you are allowing the other force or the higher force or the different force to come forth. So you can call it whatever you want, but it will surrender. You can't really force surrender. You can help yourself surrender. You can be aware of it, but it will actually, it's just a flow that takes place naturally. So being more aware of it is more helpful.
Okay. All right. And then the third step is stillness. And when I think of stillness, you know, a couple of things. I'm thinking of be still and know that I am God. And I'm also thinking that when people go into the quietness, into the stillness, that they're doing some type of meditation. So could meditation be applied to this as well?
Absolutely. Again, it's how you want to look at it. The spiritual side of it would be that, that you act. What happens is that your mind gets quiet. Now, how you get your mind quiet is either intentional or by accident, right? If I am intentionally making my mind as quiet as I can be, then I am intentionally meditating, and I am intentionally quieting the chatter of my mind and allowing the stillness to come forth. I'm also a yoga teacher, so I do this as well in my yoga classes in terms of stillness. Yes, be still and know that I am God, or can be interpreted many different ways, but it is within the stillness that the answers come forth. So let's say I'm not spiritual at all, I'm not religious, I don't believe in God, I don't believe anything about that. I am still that person, and epiphanies are still coming in, and my mind is still getting quiet, and I'm still surrendering. Okay, so you don't have to believe in God to have this happen. You don't have to believe in an almighty power, but this is the process that takes place. So because what will happen is the person who's not looking at it from a spiritual point of view, but they're looking at it neuroscientifically or biologically, the scientist, if you will, that's not going to believe that there's anything woo-woo about this, that it will tell you that this is just scientific, is that. So then that person will still be getting answers, but what happened when they got the answer? They got the answer when their brain was in an alpha state. So they got the answer when they were in some sort of meditative state that had the left brain was shut down. So they don't have to be in a church praying or meditating to have their left brain shut down. They can literally be playing ping pong or walking or on the boat or wherever it is that they're totally relaxed, or they're waking up or falling asleep, somewhere where their left brain is not engaged.
Absolutely.
So it doesn't have to be looked at all spiritually. That's why science and spirit are coming together, because this is biologically proven. The fact is that the left brain will be quieted, and either it's intentional or unintentional, but that's where the right side comes in and where the wisdom comes in.
Absolutely. And so that goes into step four. And you kind of re-talked about that just now. When you're still, you're able to listen, step four. And then after you listen for the answers, correct, or the aha moments, and then you gave like a bridge between how to turn that aha moment into an ow moment. Is this where how this happens at this particular step?
Well, for anybody that's been listening and knows the six-step process and then applies that into their life in terms of being aware of their aha moments and how they come in, then they are turning them into owl moments. Like I said, truth never costs any money. And wisdom is available to all. And it's a very simple process. It's just being aware of it. So the shift comes through in taking the aha moments or the epiphanies from random, occasional, to constant, expected, and with gratitude. So it is just simply a shift of attitude and awareness about them that shifts them from just another aha moment that came and went into an optimal wisdom learning moment, meaning that we are receiving wisdom, learning from these sacred truths that are coming through and using them, and then that makes it an optimal wisdom learning or an owl moment, owl, the bird of wisdom or whatever. So that's the shift between an aha and an owl moment, and that's how it happens. You don't get a certificate, I could give you a little diploma in it, but it just is a shift of awareness, you know? I mean, our left brain might want a piece of paper on it, but it's really not about that. It's just simply about getting to know thyself.
Getting to know thyself. And a lot of people are walking on this planet not knowing who they truly are. Not at all.
There's so many lines to that. So many jokes I could make. But anyway, yes, there are many of us that are walking around not knowing who we are. Many, most, the majority, yes.
Most
I agree. And so this is, now, the other thing that I would like to share is the importance of this for a classroom, having, you know, of course, being the educator that I am. So this process of wisdom from the inner teacher, the title of the book, applies to everybody everywhere all the time, right? No matter who you are, where you are. However, so in the classroom, though, however, let's bring it down to the classroom of the second grade teacher, and there let's make it a woman teacher, and there she is, and she has this classroom full of students, and she is filled with diplomas and certifications and standards and Common Core and all the different things that she's expert in, or able to individualize and strategize and diagnose and be very quite the specialist to figure out how to teach and have this child learn. And that is all necessary and all very true. My input is that you take all of that that's already in place, and then you add this ingredient of when the classroom is buzzing along with all the different learning activities going on, and the child pops up with a, I got it, oh yeah, that's the answer.
Yes.
Then the teacher pauses, because the teacher, number one, has done the work within herself to know what an owl moment is, so that she recognizes, boom, there is an owl moment. And the most important thing that we can do for that student is to stop right then and there and recognize what the conditions are around that student. For that student, now we can talk about learning styles, we can talk about learning conditions and so on. They are all part of that. But we have to really, really pay attention to that, and then not only paying attention to the conditions that this student needs to have a group, this person needs to be alone, this person needs to be have heard it on a tape, you know, this person needs to get it three times over, I have to repeat it seven times to that kid. Whatever it is for it to take place, a good teacher is a good teacher is a good teacher, and they will always be able, they will do this intuitively. And I say intuitively that they will do this and have done it forever and will continue to do it, and I applaud them for being good teachers. However,
yes,
we want all teachers to be able to do this, and the most important part of all is that they share with the student what the conditions are. One of the greatest sins, if you will, of teaching, if there is such a word, and we're known to make up
well,
words.
Now you have made that word up, okay, so
yes,
it's out there.
Oh, good, then other people can use it too. Is that we think that we are the holder of all knowledge, and we are the vessel of all knowledge, and we divvy it out chapter by chapter or whatever, when in fact we're the facilitators of the wisdom coming through. And so, therefore, when we do all this work with the learning styles and interest inventories and the multiple intelligences and all the different things that we do, we normally do not share it with the student or share it to the degree that we could or should that will then benefit the student. I'll give you an example. I'm a doctor of education. I have taught, you know, Myers-Briggs. I have taken Myers-Briggs. I've taken every personality test, given them, received them, everything about it. I've been told I was a visual learner. I understood that I am. I could write it on the thing, I'm a visual learner. 50 years old, all of a sudden somebody gives me a GPS. Poof. That moment in time was my owl moment for understanding that I'm a visual learner. When that GPS kicked in and I could see where this road connected to that road in this amount of time and the whole thing and the visual and the speech and the whole everything, my life changed. And I have spent months and years driving around in circles, wasting gas money and time and frustration. And in that little tool of the GPS literally was a lifesaver. The point being that up until that time, all the work that had been done with me learning that I am a visual learner didn't really get through, okay, all of it. And I was an expert in it. I'm a doctor of it, and I still didn't get it, right, until that moment, until that device took place, and I practically, within the practical living of life, the doing, not the hearing, right, not the doing, used it, and then I got it. Now, transferring that back to the classroom, if we could, if every teacher out there would get that GPS moment for each student in the classroom, if I had known that when I was 2, 5, 15, or 40, my life would have been different my entire first 50 years of my life. But I never really got it. So my goal is to have teachers make that happen so that the students know themselves, so that they understand and know themselves so well that they know that they need to have it visually, or they need to have it written, or they need to be by themselves, or whatever it is that they need, because what we need to do is to teach them how to learn, not teach them stuff, not teach them things. They need to learn how to learn, and learning intuitively, or how they each individual learns, is the greatest gift and the greatest purpose of teaching. And teachers have, to me, a calling and the greatest responsibility in life other than parenting. So if they have this great responsibility to care for these children and are literally building our future, then the most important thing that we can do for them is to share with them completely who they are. And so at those moments in the classroom when they are getting it, that's when we capture it. And that's where we learn it, and that's where we integrate it and make it, digest it, make them digest who they are and how they've come to learn that. So that's my greatest mission in the world of education.
Man, oh man, Dr. Janice, I mean, if people didn't hear your passion for what you, the message that you want to convey to all teachers in what you just said in this last minute or two, I mean, they weren't listening. I'm telling you, you really have a love and a passion for this, to get this message over to these, to all individuals. So my next question I want to say is, do you go to schools? How do you get this out to, besides being on my radio program? That's one way. But do you give workshops? Do you, what do you do? How do you get this message out to the teachers?
Well, I'm sitting in a place where it makes me quite humble, in that the marketing of this whole book and content, I don't really know how to do it all. So I am surrendered in that I don't know how to do this. And my owl, which is my icon, actually an American Indian totem is my totem, is I'm allowing this owl, if you will, metaphorically, to fly me to the next place. And so I'm having to practice, walk my talk, in that as the owl takes me, well, should I be on this radio show or should I not, then I will listen within and say yes or no and go forward. What I'm doing is I'm just being open to all the different doors that are opening and seeking different doors and opportunities and allowing myself to walk through them and see where it goes. So I'm not being very professional about it, but what's happening is that I am giving workshops. I did a keynote up in Chicago for Medina School District, and you can go on my website, janicefletcher.com, and see many of the things that I've done. I'm off to the North Carolina Elementary Educators Association conference this weekend. I was at the Montessori conference two weekends ago in South Carolina. I'm doing book signings. I was at a New Age bookstore book signing. I have a wide variety of things that I'm doing. So it's getting out there, and the response is very, very positive with the audiences that I have. That's what I'm doing. So what, in terms of me, yes, I'm available for keynotes. I'm available for breakout sessions. I have a six-hour training, one-day training session for Wisdom from the Inner Teacher. I've broken that down into six different subtopics. The book is being bought by schools for faculties to use as a book study, a chapter at a time. It has been discussed for me to come in and lead a book study once a month as staff development. I also do webinars. I'm doing a webinar for the North Carolina Charter School Association next week on the 7th. You can tune in for that one. You can write me at my email or my website, janicefletcher.com, and I can share with you how to get into that webinar that's coming up next week. I'm also going to be doing webinars with copper.com, copperindustries.com, and I'm going to be working with them. So, and I am available. I'm doing all sorts of things everywhere.
Wow, you are a busy woman. You are a busy woman. And you know what? I see that we have someone who called in, and I'm going to see if there is a question. Hello, caller number one. Caller number one? Okay, caller number one. Caller number one, hello, how are you? Can you hear me? Do you have a question? Okay, caller number one doesn't have a question right now. So, let's move on. Well, you know, you're fabulous. And I noticed in your chapter that, in your book, excuse me, you have a chapter on the joy. And you know, my brand is all about joy. So let's spend a couple of minutes talking about joy. So I noticed that you started your chapter out with a quote by Albert Einstein. It is the supreme art of a teacher to awaken joy in creative expression and knowledge. So talk about the joy factor for a minute or two.
Well, take yourself into the moment of insight or the aha. Okay, everybody that's listening, just go there for a minute. And what does that feel like, right? Mm. That's really a good space to be in. There is no anxiety. There's no worries. You're not struggling, there's no frustration. In fact, the opposite. Because there you are, you're in a peaceful state of mind, and poof, you've gotten the answer. And not only when that wisdom comes through, it feels, you know that it's truth, okay? Immediately know that it's truth and never question it. And what a confident feeling that is, right? It's just so nice to know absolutely that what you know is true. And then how can you judge that? That's joy, right? That's how joyful is that of a way to live? So if we have those moments occasionally, we don't really even pay attention to them, imagine how joy-filled our life would be if we had more and more and more of those moments and our life was predominantly led by that flow of wisdom coming through us. It has been a joy-filled life. Completely,
yes.
Absolutely,
yes.
Joy coming through. And, you know, it might be interesting to share the topics of the chapters of the book, if you'd like to share with the audience, because there may be a chapter that people may be interested in, and then they can look up a bit more.
Well, yes. Chapter number one is on the wisdom, which we've talked briefly about the wisdom this morning. And then chapter two is the moment, okay? And that is getting that aha moment. Isn't that correct? Okay.
Uh-huh. The learning moment. Yeah.
It's the learning moment, the aha. Okay, I got it. Okay, I got it. And then the calling. And, you know, when I look at that, it's like, what am I listening? Is that the listening part? Am I hearing what I'm called for? What am I supposed to do? Answering the call. How do you know? How do we know? You know, and service. You know, I at the very beginning when you were talking about you were in the service of education, and I think if everybody should, here's the shouldn't on yourself now, is that if we do everything from a place of service, I think that would bring these aha moments more readily, these epiphanies that you speak of, those moments that are joy-filled because we're coming from a place of service. We're coming from a place of the heart. Ah, interesting. Very wonderful. Chapter 4 is the science that you are connecting so well with the creativity part or the creative part of our brains, so that it's not all woo-hoo anymore. It has some proof. It has scientific evidence to back it up. And then the art. What's the art about, Dr. Janice?
It's the idea of using the right side of the brain. It's the art of teaching. It's the art of your work. Rather than doing it as a linear duty, looking and shifting into the art of it.
Yes.
The bigger picture of what it is that you're doing. And for this, a lot of it was teachers. They're talking about the art of teaching. How do you become an artful teacher rather than just a practical teacher?
Yes, yes, yes. And the influence. The influence. Are we talking about, because influence can be a two-way street. because you are the influence in other people's lives, and then you can be the recipient of influence from other people.
Well, the most important thing is to realize that whether we want to do it or not, we are being influential, and teachers, especially in a classroom, are being extraordinarily influential. And so to be cognizant and aware of the influence that we are.
Mm-hmm.
and what are we going to do with this influence that we exude? So that's really what that chapter is all about, is being cognizant and dutiful with our influence, and especially as the teachers in the classroom with the students.
Yes, yes, yes. And then the spirit. So are we talking about spirit, capital S, or
the individual? Yeah,
the individual.
How they define it. You know, whether or not they want to look at it as the spirit, from a spiritual point of view, or the enthusiasm, if you will, which would not be the spiritual point of view, just the practical, biological, physical enthusiasm of, you know, being spirit filled as we go through the cheerleading football season, and the joy. We talked about the joy,
yes,
and how that is, and then the last chapter is about love. Right, which
yes,
is what it's all about. And so all of those chapters talk about, they all have the six-step process integrated into the chapter, reiterated with examples and stories of how they have applied to me and to others, or how they could apply to me and or to others. The other thing that is probably, I thought it would be important for the audience to hear the chapters, because one or another
yes,
chapter might ring true. But another thing that's happening with this book is that it's a great Christmas gift. People are like, this for teachers especially, they're looking for teacher gifts. And
yes,
I would love for every teacher to have this gift for Christmas or whatever, because it is just, because there are 9 chapters, and one of them, if not many, will hit to them. And it's not a hard book to read at all. It's actually very fast read and enjoyable. You know, I talk about all the pitfalls, but not all. There's many more that I could talk about. But
yes,
many of the pitfalls,
yes,
of my life and the aha moments that I've missed, or that I've learned from, or, you know, it's hopefully interesting to people as well. But so, like I said, PTAs are giving it to teachers as, you know, faculties, and they're giving it as teacher gifts. And then people, of course, but it's not just for teachers. It's for everybody, because it applies to everybody. And so, in fact, most of my sales have not been to educators. So that's interesting as well. Yeah.
Well, we need to get this book in the hands of all educators if possible, because I think, you know, with the way education is these days, you know, their education is not quite like it was when we were little girls. Teachers find themselves in precarious situations, not knowing from day to day if their jobs
right,
are on the line, or
yes,
are they teaching the tests, or are you teaching the individual to be continuous learners? And,
yeah,
and, you know, what are we actually teaching? And the curriculum, what type of curriculum is found in the schools these days, you know? And it's not necessarily, I want to say, quote, unquote, the best curriculum. And you just never know. Just never know. So, Dr. Janice, you know what?
Yeah.
It's been a blast. As I go back and pass and into the past, in the past, to say blast. Again, please tell our listening audience how to get in touch with you so that they can buy those Christmas gifts for the teachers and for everybody in their lives.
The easiest thing to do is to go to JaniceFletcher.com, which is JaniceFletcher.com. The book is on my website and is able to be ordered there. They can also order it on Amazon. It's also in Kindle form. And if they're interested in having me present, speak, train, book sign, then, again, they can contact me through my email, which is drjanicefletcher@gmail.com, without any periods or dots or anything. And I would be most welcome to see whether or not the OWL is interested in flying into their world and influencing them, or making them aware of what's already happening, and just shifting the consciousness and awareness so that everybody can have more insight and more wisdom, and a more joy-filled life. So thank you very much for allowing me to be on your radio show today and share this message with the world. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for being on the Joy of Wealthy Living radio program. This was a thrill, definitely, to have you there. And everybody out there in radio land, wherever you are, I just want to say thank you for tuning in the Joy of Wealthy Living radio program, and see you next week. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to the Joy of Wealthy Living radio program with Dr. Ann Williamson. If you'd like to contact Dr. Ann, go to her website, www.myjoyenterprise.com, or email her at drann@myjoyenterprise.com. We'll see you back here next week.